Hey there. In this episode, there's a couple of mentions of suicidal ideation, so we just want to let you know in case this is something that's triggering for you. If you need help, please get in touch with Lifeline Australia on 131114. And if you're not in Australia, look into what your local support line is because there will definitely be one. And please, of course, use your own discretion when listening to this episode. You're listening to Congratulations, It's a Cyst, a holistic health podcast for your curious brain. Hello, Megan Haralampo. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
I got you out of bed early this morning.
Yeah, you did, but that's okay. Like I was saying before, I've got a bit of a crunchy voice, but maybe that'll sound nicer on the recording. I don't know.
Maybe. Let that sexy husky voice we go with. Yeah, right.
I'm just going to tell myself that anyway.
Yeah.
So I've got a whole heap of things to introduce you as, and I'm so freaking excited about this. So you're a naturopath, nutritionist, a herbalist, and you've studied biomedical science as well.
Yes, that's correct. I've done 2 degrees, so I would call myself an overqualified naturopath. I've done a biomedical science degree, so a Bachelor of Biomedical Science, and then I decided to do a Bachelor of Clinical Sciences where I studied in naturopathy and complementary medicine as well. So I'm just an overqualified naturopath.
Oh, I love that you're overqualified. So we're going to talk about the pill, and I think overqualification in terms of something like this is going to be so freaking awesome. So tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, as you lovely introduced me, my name is Megan. I started practicing now 6 years ago. I started studying 10 years ago, which is honestly wild. But I, as most naturopaths do, they get out and they kind of treat everything and anything. And then over the last sort of 6 years, I have found this little niche that I really like to be a part of. And that is hormones, helping to get women off the pill and to really partner with their body to have a better understanding of what's going on with them, so they don't have to be managed by medication every day. And I'm certainly one of those girls. I was 16, 17 when I went on the pill, and you know, thankfully I didn't have many side effects except I had raging anxiety, and then I was raging lunatic every single month. But you know, I went on the pill, I didn't get much of a conversation with my doctor. It was, everyone was doing it, and so I just went and did it, you know, for contraception. And then it wasn't until I went through my studies, you know, sort of 8 years later, that I was kind of like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to do this to my body anymore. And I suppose I had just wished at the time, because when I was growing up, I had MySpace and MSN Messenger. I didn't have Instagram and like all this amazing access to information that we have now. And I always reflect back and wish I at least had the knowledge there. And if I still had decided to go on the pill, that's okay. But I may have decided A, not to go on it for as long, or, you know, B, I might have decided not to go on it at all. And then I might have been able to learn the tools to actually, you know, understand my cycle and know that I can't get pregnant every single day, because that's all I thought. You know, my sex education was put a condom on a banana and then you're like, don't ever have sex because you're going to get pregnant every single day. And then that was pretty much it, right? And then, and so I suppose this is where I've come from, that is to, you know, help women understand their bodies better so they don't need a medical degree. I'm really passionate about blood testing and understanding, you know, you guys understanding your body as well. And so, yeah, here I am learning, teaching women about their hormones and, you know, helping women to get off the pill and educating them on the pill as well.
Woohoo! That sounds amazing. And I never got this banana with a condom on it. Like, it's so true. We kind of go through thinking that there's a risk of even like thinking about a penis, you're just going to get pregnant. So
totally.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. So you're so right. There's just so much more information now, and it's so freaking awesome to have people like you spreading the word, like helping people make these decisions on an educated basis instead of just being like, here's your one option, let's do it. So
exactly.
Let's break down, what is the pill?
So the pill, however you want to put it, so we call them hormonal contraceptions, whether that be the pill, the IUD, the NuvaRing, the Depot shot, the Mirena, copper IUD, whatever you want to call it. There is slight variations with the Mirena and the Kylena, which has come out, and also the copper IUD. But they all do impact on your hormones in some way. So for being consistent, when I talk about a hormonal contraceptive, I'm really just talking about the pill, the depot shot, NuvaRings, all those bits and pieces, and the Mirena and the IUD and the copper IUD to a certain extent as well. But I will touch on those later. With the pill, basically what it is doing and it's designed to do is to go in, shut down your endocrine system, and so you don't have a conversation anymore between your brain talking to your ovaries. So that shuts down ovulation. So you don't release an egg anymore. It also impacts on mucus production. So the way in which you get sperm to an egg is via your mucus production. So when you're coming up to ovulation, you produce a lot of mucus because of your estrogen. That mucus is like a super highway for sperm. They love to be nourished along that way. And it's like, oh, hey guys, we're all going to hang out here. We're going to get our food for the week. And then we're going to, you know, go for that treacherous journey up to the egg, basically. The pill impacts on that too. And it also impacts on how thick your endometrial lining grows. So that's the lining within your actual uterus. You need a lining of at least 7 mils to even have any chance of that egg, you know, hanging out and sticking and then getting pregnant. So the pill impacts on that. But it's really that entire disruption between that conversation between your brain and your ovaries. It's kind of like you've taken the hardware out of your computer system and then you've taken that all off online and then you've, you know, delivered a synthetic stream of synthetic hormones into your body to then shut down that whole, you know, endocrine system. And it's not just the, you know, releasing of the egg that it impacts on. It impacts on your thyroid production. It impacts on your adrenal function. It certainly impacts on your testosterone. It tanks libido like there's no tomorrow. And then there's a whole slew of other side effects. Like most women, there was a great study done on women between being 15 to 19, and they took the pill and there was a reported increase of, I think, a twofold increase, and I'm not going to get it entirely right, but there was about a twofold increase in women taking the pill and suicidal ideation and anxiety, which is massive and
huge,
crazy, right? So that is, I suppose, in a nutshell, what the pill is doing. It's really disrupting your endocrine system. You know, that conversation between your brain and your ovaries is completely severed, and then also disrupting your other organs as well, that being your adrenal gland, your thyroid gland, you know, and then also your libido, and there's a whole other range of things that it does as well.
And the irony of taking a pill every single day of the month so that you can have sex without getting pregnant and then your libido goes through the freaking floor is just ridiculous. Like,
I know, right?
It's so true. It's like one of those really, really, really big side effects, and it makes absolutely no freaking sense whatsoever.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so we've already spoken about what some of the psychological symptoms are. So what are some of the more physical symptoms?
Physical symptoms are, and it really depends on the person. So some women will report weight gain, and it's really their moods. A lot of people report worsening anxiety and depression and suicidal ideation. And then the reason I suppose most women go on the pill is A, for contraception. It's to balance their hormones, but it doesn't balance your hormones. And then it's to help with your skin, you know. But it's not A, not balancing anything, and it's certainly not helping us. It's helping your skin, but you're only just waiting for it to come off, and you're going to have to deal with the situation eventually. But the symptoms are really the weight gain, anxiety and depression, and then thyroid dysfunction, adrenal issues, so energy, low libido. There is a small risk of blood clots, but that's only in a certain certain percentage of the population. Not everyone gets that. There's a whole slew of other things as well, but they're kind of the main ones.
Yeah, so with acne being one of the main ones, when I was younger, my acne was always kind of up and down, up and down, up and down. But I'd been on pills that kind of intensified that. Is that a common thing?
Yeah, so with the pill, there are three drugs that are the ones for acne that they usually put you on. That's Brenda, Yaz, Yasmin, and Diane. So these drugs are oil suppressing drugs and testosterone lessening drugs. So those ones in particular should help your skin. If it's not, then it's not, you know, it's not doing its job properly. If you're on another pill and you get a worsening of your skin, then most doctors will take you off that pill and then put you on kind of like a Diane or a Brenda or, you know, whatever it is, you know, Yaz or Yasmin. But sometimes you can get worsening acne on other pills, mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was on Levlin. Does that sound familiar?
Levlin.
Yeah. And my skin was just like it just went crazy. And yes. I was so, so sad. And I'd never, because I'd been on Yaz previously and I was kind of okay. And then going on that, yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is just the worst. And then went on Novaline yes. from there, which you mentioned before.
Yes, yes, yes.
We talk about the pill as like the pill and it's only a pill, but obviously there's so many different yeah. types of hormonal contraception. So can you totally. Tell us a little bit about the Novaring and the copper yes. IUD and what they yes. kind of, how they all differ to the pill?
Yeah, look, I would say the pill and the NuvaRing are pretty similar in what they do. They really just release, you know, synthetic hormones. It's just, you know, a different variation. The Implanon's very similar to that. The Depot shot, again, is similar-ish, but then you literally don't get a period for 3 months and you need to go get these shots every 3 months. But it's really working on the same premise that it's disrupting your, you know, your hormonal system. Remembering when you're on the pill, you're not getting a period. So like if you skip a bleed for 3 months, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's you're having a withdrawal bleed from synthetic hormones. You're not having a period. There is no medical reason to have a withdrawal bleed when you're on the pill. That's why, and actually, in fact, when they developed the pill, and I know I'm sidetracking right now.
Nah, please do.
But when they developed the pill back in the 1960s by two men, mind you, they developed the pill without the pill bleed that we have now, those sugar pills. And when they took it to market, women were really uncomfortable taking it because they thought they were constantly pregnant because they weren't getting a bleed or a period. And so they went back and they thought, okay, how are we going to fix this issue? Because we want to take it to market and have women, you know, take it. So they put in the sugar pills that we now take today. So women in their mind were having a bleed. So they thought that they were having a period. And so in fact, looking back, you know, when they were kind of looking at sort of how they make these women take it, it's really just looking at that sugar pill, but they're not, you're not having a period. You know, you're just having a withdrawal bleed from synthetic hormones.
Oh my gosh. It's just a psychological thing. Like we just were like, oh, that doesn't seem normal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's all based on that psychology back in the 1960s when it was taken to market. And now we have those sugar bleeds. And I often have women come, you know, to me and through no fault of their own and no judgment, you know, and they'll say, yeah, my hormones were great. My periods were coming really regular on the pill. And then I have to go through that whole education of, you know, you're not having a period. There is no period on the pill. That doesn't exist. You're just having we call it a pill bleed, which is a withdrawal bleed from synthetic hormones. That's all that is. It's nothing else.
You know, it's quite ambiguous when you look into it. Like, what does the pill period actually mean? So it's yes. you're only getting it because you're withdrawing from the hormones. Is that right?
Exactly. So when you take the pill and I'll get back to the differences in the pills in a minute, is when you're taking the pill, you know, NuvaRing, whatever, you are building up your lining with synthetic hormones. That's all it's doing. It builds your uterine lining up. And then when you take the sugar pills, or the lining that you're bleeding out, or your the period that you see is being built by your synthetic hormones. Mm. And that typically it will be a lighter period because the synthetic hormones don't interact as much with the uterus. And so you don't get a thicker lining. But typically you'll have a lighter period on the pill. And then you just get a withdrawal bleed. That's literally all it is. It's nothing more. It's just synthetic hormones build that lining up. You take a sugar pill. And so your hormones go down. And so that goes, okay, well, we need to shed this lining. It's not, you're not going through the menstrual cycle. You're not releasing your own estrogen. You're not ovulating and releasing an egg to release your progesterone and then having that beautiful progesterone come down. And then when you are going through that cycle of having your progesterone and your estrogen go down, then that initiates a period for you. That's not happening. And so it's a completely synthetic thing. And coming back onto the differences with the Marina, Kylena, there's that new one out, the Kylena. Marina, again, it's an IUD that's inserted into the cervix. Into the uterus, I should say, and it is touted as better. I would say if you were going to go on anything, that would be the thing that I would recommend, because some women can still ovulate on it, so you can still get a little bit of your own hormones doing their thing. Not all women ovulate on it, and some women do eventually lose their periods on it. It's certainly recommended for really heavy periods. But again, I'm always thinking, why do you have heavy periods in the first place? Mm. The Marina might be that quick fix solution that you're looking for, but there is a reason you have heavy periods in the first place. And it might be all well and good to go on it now, but eventually you're going to have to deal with it at some point. You know, whether you're 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, it's going to have to happen at some point, because when you take a hormonal contraceptive, whether that be the copper IUD, the Marina, the Kylena, the pills, a depot shot, whatever it is, doesn't matter. that problem you had when you weren't on the pill is going to be there when you come off it because it's not fixing anything.
Whoa.
Mind blown.
It's so good. It's so good. I feel like I started off the chat really sleepy and now I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like awake. I'm ready.
Yes.
Also, if you go on any tangents, I'm just going to join in. So I'm terrible for it. I'll just go along for the ride. No. I love a good tangent. Okay, cool. So with all the knowledge that you have, is there any situation where you would recommend the pill?
I am not, and I will say this, I am not like you can never go on the pill. I'm not that type of practitioner. I have plenty of women who come to me on the pill and they're like, I'm just not ready. And that's fine. I work with whatever, like wherever you're at. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to just work with you on the pill, but also knowing I can't balance your hormones on the pill. And so it is like throwing gasoline on the fire every day while I'm trying to basically, you know, add the fire extinguisher on. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to do that. I can do that. That's no dramas. And certainly I've got lots of women like that who are just at their stage of their life, it's just not for them. And we're working on other things for them to try and get them to a space where they're then ready to transition off. And then it's also looking at your individual situations as well, you know, and there's certainly situations that would then warrant, you know, taking the pill. But again, this is really then dependent on the individual person, their own living situations, lifestyle, you know, and then looking at, okay, let's just go on it for a year. So to get you through this period, I suppose. And then we can do the education, you know, prepping the body to come off it and then doing that education around the cycles as well while they're on it and then coming off it at some stage. So I would just say it's really just dependent on the person.
No, that totally makes sense. And in terms of people who definitely probably should avoid the pill, are there any situations where maybe there's a condition going on or something like that where you would absolutely say it's really not a good idea for you to be on the pill?
Yes. So anyone who has migraines, anyone suffering from migraines shouldn't go on a pill. Anyone who has a family history of blood clotting shouldn't go on the pill. They'd probably be your two main ones that you'd be looking at, especially with even doctors would take you off that. Mm-hmm. Maybe even breast cancer to a certain extent because they are estrogen dependent, you know, pills. And so if there is a family history of breast cancer, you're adding in synthetic estrogen, adding more fuel to the fire. So that could be another one as well, potentially.
So you were saying those stages when you're not on hormonal contraception, you actually go through these natural stages of releasing your hormones. So long term, there's got to be a repercussion for not naturally producing these hormones yourself.
For sure.
What would those kind of repercussions be?
One of them is bone health. So when you are between the ages of, I think it's 19 to 25 for women, you go through a transition where you reach something called peak bone mass. So that is when you basically grow and develop as much bone as you can to then set you up for healthy bone mass later in life to prevent osteoporosis. Estrogen helps you to strengthen your bone. Progesterone helps to build new bone. You're not making those things when you're on the pill. And so a lot of women on the pill have basically missed this window of opportunity to reach their peak bone mass and so are at an increased risk of developing osteoporosis, not only in later life, but in earlier life as well, because they've failed to reach this peak bone mass between the ages of 19 to 25. So that's a massive one.
Wow, that's
scary. Breast health is huge. No, it is. It's frightening. And I remember learning about that from, you know, a fabulous MD in America called Dr. Geraldine Pryor. She has done amazing work on that. And I was so angry because I was on it from 17 to basically 25, which is, you know, probably the prime time years that you really go on the pill, right? Most people go on it at about, you know, 17, 16, 19.
Yeah.
And they usually come off it by about 27, 28, because that's when they kind of go, okay, I want to get pregnant, you know, and they sort of want to sort of, you know, investigate their hormones. And I was so angry when I read that because I thought, I have, you know, gone on this because I just didn't know any better. And thankfully I didn't have a lot of side effects, you know, from it, but I've missed that. I can't get that time back. I'm now 34. I can't, that time doesn't exist for me anymore. You know, I've now well and truly passed 30, 25 and it's completely done.
Yeah.
I apologize, my children are just coming. It'll be a nice little addition to the podcast.
Absolutely. 100%. Like, this is the period of time where Most people would be on the pill, and I never knew that. And breast health, you said as well?
Yeah, breast health. There is research to suggest, I think it protects against uterine cancer, I believe. There is some research that says it is good for that. But then it's like the trade-off is like, okay, well, maybe we should just be looking to work with our hormones on a whole, because we can then reduce our risk, you know, as a whole with all the cancers as well. So there is that protection with your breast health, your bone health, and your heart health as well, and certainly your moods as well. It's not that, and also your mental health, and certainly the moods as well. And that's because the way that when you release progesterone, progesterone interacts with something called our GABA receptors, and our GABA receptors are a calming neurotransmitter. And so when you release GABA, you get this really nice soothing, calming effect on the brain. And when you're on the pill, when you're being delivered a steady stream of progestin, which is synthetic progesterone, you're not getting that same interaction with the brain, which is often why women report those mood issues being on the pill. It's because of that lack of progesterone, and progestin, which is in synthetic hormones, is being known to drive hormone mood issues on the pill particularly.
Wow, yeah. I really want to dive in maybe a little bit deeper into how the hormones are released throughout the cycle. So you gave us a little bit of, you know, that relaxing progesterone release. And what I think is really funny is when you say that, most people listening are going to be like, not for me, in that period. And that's because of that unnatural hormones, or maybe the cycle isn't regular. So can you break down the menstrual cycle on a typical 28-day cycle?
Yeah, I'll go with 28 days. And I know we're listening and being like, mine's 40 days and 35 days. And so, and that's okay. You'll still go through these phases. You'll just have different variations of these phase lengths, basically. But for argument's sake, you've got four phases of your menstrual cycle. You have menstrual, which is bleeding. That's when our hormones are at its lowest. You're not making any progesterone at that time, and estrogen is relatively low. And then we come into our follicular phase. This is when we're starting to build estrogen. We still have no progesterone. So this is when estrogen is coming in. It's starting to do its thing. It's building the lining up ready in preparation for an egg to come out. And then when you reach ovulation, this is when your estrogen will be at its highest point. An LH surge and the highest level of estrogen is what triggers ovulation. So it's those two hormones that work together. Then you get the releasing of the egg. So that is the ovulation phase. And then after you release an egg, that's when progesterone comes in. The only way you can make progesterone is by releasing an egg. So once the egg is released, you now have estrogen, but you also have progesterone in. And then once you do a, you know, typical 14 days of that, then those hormones will start to come down again, and then the whole cycle starts again. You then go through menstrual, follicular, ovulation, and then luteal. And coming back to what you originally said, there can be a few reasons for that. It'll either be low progesterone, so you're not actually making enough progesterone to attach to enough GABA receptors to get that soothing and calming, relaxing effect, or you're A, making too much estrogen. And so your progesterone might look okay, but in fact, it's masquerading as a low progesterone because your estrogen is so high that it's making you feel like rubbish as well leading up into the cycle. So that's usually the two things that I would say leading up to it. There's also another hormonal condition called PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder, and that's a severe form of PMS. And so that's entirely different. Instead of when they attach their progesterone to GABA, instead of giving them a calming effect, it in fact does the exact opposite and gives them a really stimulating effect, whereby they go from feeling relatively normal in the first half of their cycle to like, I'm feeling suicidal, you know, severe depression, you know, severe anxiety, you know, insomnia. This is really, you know, severe PMDD. And that certainly can be treated as well. And I work with clients every day with PMDD as well. But that's kind of your severe form of PMS. And then you've got your sort of general PMS, but I would be working on balancing your hormones for either one as well.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So I've just thrown all my questions in the bin because I'm just going to now just like jump off the back of what you're saying. So the really, really high estrogen, is that what we refer to as like estrogen dominance? Would that be?
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be, yeah. So we don't like to use that word anymore with the estrogen dominance terminology.
Sorry.
It's a really, it's fine. I don't even care. It's fine. Please no. It's really the imbalance between the two hormones because and what I mean by that is you can have normal estrogen as well, but then your progesterone is really low. And so it's really just a normal estrogen, but a low progesterone. And then the estrogen is masquerading like a high estrogen because it hasn't got enough of the progesterone to balance it out. So it's really about the balance between the two hormones. An ideal estrogen level that you want to have is between 350 to 450, 7 days before your expected period. The ideal progesterone that you want to have 7 days before your expected period is anything over 40. So when you're looking at your blood tests, you've got to make sure that you get it tested 7 days before your expected period. And you also need to then look at your levels. Don't listen. Oh, well, actually, I won't say that. I'll take a step back before I say that. When you go to your doctor's surgery, doctors aren't trained to look at hormonal blood tests. They don't. There isn't a lot of training around it. Doctors are fabulous, and I work with a lot of great doctors here up on the Gold Coast, but there is a lack of knowledge and understanding around what hormonal blood tests should be. There are some fabulous doctors out there that do know these things, but you really do need to go on and do that additional training to understand what is normal and what's not, and then you can get, you know, come back to a balance within your hormones to make you guys feel better, you know, make you feel better as well. But when you look at your bloods, 7 days before your expected period, 350 to 450 for estrogen, and anything above 40 for your progesterone would be ideal.
Okay, perfect. And are there any ways, like are there any telltale signs where you could be like, oh, I'm feeling like this, maybe I need to look into my estrogen or maybe I need to look into my progesterone?
Yeah, so low progesterone, you would be looking at spotting before your period. So a day or two of spotting, no problem. But if you're spotting for like up to 5 days before your period, that can be a signal of low progesterone. That's because progesterone holds your uterine lining in place. So estrogen grows it, but progesterone holds it in place. And so if that progesterone is starting to drop down too quickly, you'll start to see those spots of blood leading up to your period. So that can be a sign of low progesterone. Teary, emotional, irritable, report anxiety and insomnia during that luteal phase. So that phase, you know, in that sort of 10 to 7 days leading up to your period, that is, can be a low progesterone, you know, sort of picture. Estrogen issues are usually bloating, fluid retention, major food cravings, weight gain. Acne can also be an issue with them as well. Fibroids, endometriosis, adenomyosis, they all usually have issues with estrogen and just heavy periods. If you have a really heavy period, if you are bleeding more than 80 mils in a cycle, your period is too heavy. And so then you need to go back and have a look and understand why your estrogen is too high. Teenage girls typically do have heavier periods. That's because they're more receptive to the call of estrogen. And certainly that does get lighter with age, but then also understanding how then you can sort of block that call of estrogen talking to the uterus so that lining doesn't grow as thick as well.
And keeping in mind, obviously, that those things that you've just spoken about, so low progesterone, low estrogen, we're not releasing our own hormones on the pill. That doesn't even come into it. Next step kind of stuff.
This is once you've come off the pill and you're, you know, ready to make that sort of partnership with your body and learn more about your hormones, then I would recommend then going and doing hormone blood testing then. I wouldn't do it when you first come off the pill. Give your body about 3 months, you know. That gives you an opportunity to kind of know, what's my body going to do? My acne went crazy. I'd never had acne before, but I came off the pill and I was like, wow, my skin is just breaking out like there's no tomorrow. And at the time when I came off it, I didn't know what was going on. But certainly after my studies, I've kind of figured out what that is. But it'll be that you'll come off it, everything's okay, or you'll come off it, you don't even get a period. You might come off it, your cycles are really irregular. You might come off it, your periods are heavy, your periods are light, whatever it is. But I like to give the body about 3 months to kind of have a look and see what it's going to do, because I need that opportunity for me as a practitioner to see how I'm going to treat you. Because if I go in and I think, okay, she's going to have her heavy periods again, I need to go in with something called DIM, for instance. So DIM actually physically reduces estrogen in the body and will lighten your periods. If I go in with that and actually this person then doesn't get a bleed for 3 months, then that's the wrong treatment for her. In fact, I really need to help recalibrate that balance between her brain and your ovaries and help to build her hormones up and nourish those hormones and really build them up. And then giving DIM would be the wrong herb. So that opportunity and window of time helps me make the right decision for what treatment I then go in for with each individual woman, because every woman coming off the pill has a very different story. It'll be a slight variation of heavy, light, you know, sort of some variation of that, but most women will report some variation of the light, heavy, no period, getting a period every 6 months, getting a period every 3 months, whatever it is, acne, you know, mood swings, whatever it is. But every woman will have a different variation of all of those sorts of symptoms coming off. And I need that opportunity to then understand how I'm then going to treat that person.
It's something so different for your body. Your body's just going to have to relearn everything all over again.
Absolutely.
Okay. So on that vein, I think it's a perfect segue into our next question about how would somebody commence the process of coming off the pill?
My first step would be to prepare your body for coming off the pill. So if you're thinking, and certainly you can quit cold turkey, you don't have to do a preparation, but doing a preparation will help with the side effects with coming off, certainly the post-pill acne, which I know is massive, making sure that your hormones, you know, are ready for coming off in the sense that, you know, you're nourishing your body with all the right nutrients to support healthy hormone production. So I would give yourself at least a month at a minimum. If you know that you were dealing with a hormonal condition before you went on the pill, like PCOS or endo, then I would give your body 3 months. And so that would include, you know, working on your diet, working on your gut, working on your liver, and then replenishing your body with vitamins and minerals. That would be kind of my four sort of pillars that I would look at and investigate. And then transitioning off the pill, working with a practitioner if you can. You certainly don't have to, but it's nice to sort of be able to touch base with someone to gauge and also give you the right information and the right supplementation and the right dietary advice based on your own individual symptoms as well. And then, as I said, coming back to what I originally said, giving your body that space to see what it's going to do, and then working with your practitioner to then develop a plan based on what your symptoms are showing.
And what can we expect? Like, how can we prepare our waters for what to expect when we start to come off the pill? Because like you were saying before, you know, you could get hormonal acne, you might, you know, have mood swings and things like that. So
look, I suppose if it's post-pill acne, there are a variety of things that I give women, particularly green tea extract is amazing, zinc is amazing. They're probably my two biggest ones. That's particularly for women when it is a post-pill pill acne situation. If it's strictly post-pill acne, green tea will work very quickly, and then also will the zinc. Zinc is fabulous. It helps with skin healing too. DIM can be helpful too because it helps to reduce testosterone, but I am wary with using that until I understand what the woman's periods are doing, because again, it reduces estrogen and it might not be the right fit for some women. So again, it just depends. With the mood sides of things, you can give things to help with the moods. Zinc, magnesium, B6, chase tree are all fabulous to kind of start that or helping to balance those moods. Certainly magnolia, passion flower, saffron, I do like. I'm looking at my herbal dispensary now. What else? Those would probably be the main ones that maybe 5-HTP to a lesser extent. I might sort of use a little bit of that potentially. They're probably your two biggest ones that I would say. Post-pill acne is massive for everyone that I see, and then usually the moods. And then the actual bleeding is probably the third thing, you know, depending on the level of severity it was for the woman. You know, was it heavy bleeding? If it's heavy bleeding, then I would go in with, you know, DIM, peony, chase tree, calcium deglucurate, and a few other bits and pieces. But it's basically things to reduce estrogen. And then if you had light periods, then I would be maybe looking to build those hormones up, you know, Shatavari would be great. Dong Quai would be fabulous. Tribulus would be great as well. And then if you don't have a period at all, you know, if you're not getting a bleed, chase tree, you know, again, tribulus would be great. They would be all fabulous things. But then understanding why you don't have a period, because you might not have a period for multitude of reasons. It could be that you just need to get that conversation up, and, you know, it could be exercise-induced, stress-induced, diet-induced, you're not eating enough, you're exercising too much, so it could be hypothalamic amenorrhea. It could be PCOS, so then we need to work on your testosterone or work on your insulin. So I would say a missing period, it really probably needs to be further dug down into, because it literally could be so many different things. And so you would need to understand it a little bit more.
I've just decided that I freaking love talking to herbalists, because you just spinning off all those names, I was like, yes, yes, yes. And I think the acne is such a dangerous one, and probably the moods as well, because, I'm coming off the pill, and then you get all this acne. It's so easy to just be like, I'm just going to go back on the pill.
Yeah, absolutely. And post-pill acne is really the result. If it is post-pill, you know, and if it's just strictly post-pill acne, it is the result of coming off the pill, usually from one of your testosterone lowering pills and oil lowering pills, that being the Brenda, the Diane, and the Yasmin or Yaz. Oh, Yaz. And when you come off these, you get a rebound in oil production. So your body makes more oil production than it's ever made before. And then you get a rebound testosterone production as your ovaries try to kick into gear. And so this combination.
Dangerous combination.
And then add to that, the pill completely ruins your microbiome. And so that intricate, you know, that link between the gut and your skin is also there too. And so it's really that sort of molding together of those three things that is really the recipe for post-pill acne. And so, yes, getting back on it will fix it, but you're just delaying the inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen again at some point. And so, again, find a practitioner you can work with who can help, you know, work through these issues with you to help at least reduce the severity of it. And knowing as well, it won't last forever. You know, post-pill acne usually peaks at about 6 months. It usually is at its worst 6 months post-pill, and then usually starts to subside over that. And if it's not getting better, find someone who can help you through it as well. Because remembering, your skin is also an organ of elimination. We have five areas of elimination. You've got your gut, your liver, lymphatics, your sweat, and also your skin. Your gut and your liver, your main areas to basically move all your rubbish out every single day. And we make toxins every day that we live and breathe. But if you're not able to move those toxins out through those two key areas, your skin is the last area of drainage or detoxification that your body tries to move toxins out. And unfortunately, I wish I could say I could put it on your back so you could cover it up, but it comes out on your skin, on your face. So it's also then addressing that too. Maybe that's something, you know, worthwhile to be looking into as well, you know, not just the post-pill acne side of things, whereby it's a testosterone and oil production thing. It also could be an elimination thing and a gut health thing too.
Okay, awesome. So if you're coming off the pill, stick with it, build up your gut microbiome and look into herbs, speak to a practitioner. That's what I'm hearing. What do you reckon?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, amazing. So we've got a couple of questions.
Yes.
And I think these questions are perfect because we've spoken a little bit about them, but that will just help us to go into it a little bit deeper. So Hayley asked, how do I get a regular cycle back? It's 29 days, 60 days, 31 days, 43 days. It's so shit and I just end up wearing black pants a lot. So we've kind of already touched on that.
Yes.
But is there any additional little nuggets that you can give us for this one?
I would say if your cycle is irregular, then you need to figure out why it's irregular. So checking, do you have PCOS? Do you not have enough progesterone? Are you making too much estrogen? Or is there a thyroid condition underlying? Those would probably be the four main things that I would be looking at to see if that is the reason for your irregular cycle. So doing your hormone test, getting your thyroid checked. And when I say thyroid, I don't mean TSH that your doctor tells you to get. I mean TSH, T4, T3, thyroid antibodies, all of them.
I saw your panel on this and I was like, yes.
Yes. Yes. So I mean the whole kit and caboodle. I don't mean just TSH. Your doctor will only test TSH, but you can have raging thyroid antibodies and a normal TSH 5 years before you get a diagnosis of Hashimoto's. So it's certainly worth looking into, particularly if your periods are irregular.
Okay, awesome. And in terms of if this is related to coming off the pill, so say someone's come off the pill, their first period takes 29 days and 60 days, 31 days. Is that pretty common for periods to kind of take a little while to regulate?
Yes, absolutely. It is also normal as well. I would say if your periods are still irregular 6 to 12 months later, then that's not normal. It can certainly take, you know, 3 to 4 months to kind of establish a regular cycle, and that's okay. But if you're still dealing with this 6 to 12 months later, then I definitely think that's worth investigating.
Okay, perfect. And our second question is from Kate. And again, we've kind of already touched on this because I just like kept on going off script. But what can help with the transition? So when I went off the pill last time, my emotions went out of whack. I wasn't able to concentrate on anything. So you've kind of told us a little bit about that transition.
I suppose coming back to what I originally said, prepare your body. You know, if you know this happened the first time, give yourself 2 or 3 months to prepare your body. Focus on really eating a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables, balancing your blood sugar, fat, fiber, and protein with your meals, replenishing your nutrients, making sure your thyroid's all good, and then come off the pill at that point. And then when you come off the pill, you can add in things like zinc, B6, and chaste tree. They're all really fabulous for your mood and really helping to balance those mood imbalances that you might be suffering from.
And also just know that it's common. Like, it's super common for your moods to go out of whack. Most people that I've spoken to about coming off the pill have experienced it. You even brought it up as one of like the two main ones. You know, you've got your acne and you've got your mood. So yeah. Stick with it.
Yes.
See how you go.
Yes, absolutely. And persevere. It will get better. I do promise you that. And partnering with your body now will pay off tenfold in the future. I remember, certainly when I was in my 20s, I did not care about my fertility at all. It was just about hanging out with my friends, going to the club and doing all those sorts of fun things, right? And, you know, thankfully the pill didn't impact on my fertility and I'm really grateful for that. But there is so, I'm probably disproportionate in the women that I see, but I see the women who can't get pregnant now. You know, they've been struggling to fall pregnant for years. And I'm not saying that the pill causes infertility, but it's covering up a bigger problem. And so you could either deal with that problem in your 20s, or you can deal with it when you actually, you know, in your 30s, when you're desperate to get pregnant, you know, and you're then scrambling to try and fix these issues when really you could have been, you know, working with your body, partnering with your body 10 years ago, and then getting your body to a place where it's then ready to conceive.
Yeah. And it's a time consuming process as well. Like, regulating your hormones isn't something that happens in a week after coming off the pill. Like, it takes, like you were just saying, it can take up to 12 months to regulate your period. Like, that's a decent amount of time. And especially when it's time critical and you want to start having kids, that is a big chunk. Like, that's a long time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And if you can give your body that time and space, it's going to A, help you not stress so much, because there's a huge stress factor when, you know, you decide to come off the pill and you've made that decision already. Okay, I want to have a baby. Then you don't want to wait, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you can give your body the opportunity to replenish your body, balance your hormones, it's going to set you up for a much healthier pregnancy and an easier fertility journey as well.
I really want to hear your top tip for someone who's coming off the pill. So this little bit's called assistance.
Yes, yes, love it.
So what's yours, Megan?
My top tip for coming off the pill is prepare your body. That will help minimize the symptoms. You will probably still experience some symptoms to a certain extent, but it will certainly help that ride off the pill be a lot more smoother.
Okay, great. And you said a little bit about diet and getting your diet on track. Is there anything specifically that we should be looking to add in or maybe limit? What are your top recommendations for that?
Green tea, peppermint tea, or spearmint tea, I should say, are fabulous for post-pill acne. Reishi mushroom is great for post-pill acne as well, so you could add those certainly into your diet. In terms of other dietary recommendations, I would be thinking lower your sugar, quit the takeaway, and really just focusing, as I said, stir fries, lots of veggies, you know, make carbohydrates the condiment of a dish rather than the hero of the dish. So having rice as a quarter of the plate, you know, having your veggies that are, you know, filling up the half of the plate. If you're going out for pizza, have a few slices, but then have veggies with it. You know, you can still go out and enjoy your life. You don't have to be restricted by a certain diet, but make your veggies the hero of the dish. And then you can have your sort of, you know, nice extras and carbohydrate sort of rich things as a sort of condiment, as I said, rather than the hero of the meal. So focusing on, you know, when you're having breakfast, having a protein rich meal, having a fiber rich meal as well, that helps to balance your hormones, that helps to set you up for a healthy day as well. You know, and then at lunchtime, again, choosing meals and choosing foods that will balance your blood sugar, you know, salads, veggies, you know, roasted sweet potato in your salads, you know, a little bit of protein, and then choosing snacks as well that balance your blood sugar. And what I mean by balancing your blood sugar is I mean not going for like a muesli bar or, you know, chocolate or, you know, muffins that are high in sugar or bagels or donuts or whatever it is. All of those things make it harder for your body to balance your hormones. And that's because cortisol, and I'll quickly touch on this, cortisol and progesterone are made from the same raw ingredient, pregnenolone. So when you have a sugar-rich meal, your pancreas is directed to release insulin, which then mops up all your blood sugar in your bloodstream. the pancreas doesn't have a way to accurately assess how much insulin it needs to release. So it usually overcompensates. And those are, it mops up all that blood sugar and then directs it into the prospective tissues that it, you know, that it needs to go to. What happens then is now you have low blood sugar. The only way for your body to increase your blood sugar, aside from eating, so if you're not eating regularly, this will apply to that as well, is to secrete cortisol. Cortisol will then stimulate the liver to release more sugar. If you're constantly doing that over the day, you're always calling on your cortisol to be released. If you are then calling on your cortisol to be released, cortisol is a priority hormone, progesterone is not. So if you're constantly asking cortisol to be made because of mismanaged blood sugar, that's going to impact on your progesterone production because these guys come from the same raw ingredient, pregnenolone. And the body will say, yeah, no, we need that pregnenolone today for that cortisol. We don't need it for progesterone because we need to keep making progesterone. That's essential for life. So that's why mismanaged blood sugar is really important. I would say that is the absolute core thing that you can do for your hormones is with your meals. And I'm not saying you have to be perfect every day. I certainly have chocolate and pizza and all those great things, but they're, you know, they're scattered throughout my month rather than in every single day, or I'm binging out on the weekend. So you can certainly go do those things. I'm not about, you know, you being perfect every single day, but I'm good pretty much 90% of the month. When you have mismanaged blood sugar, that will impact on your ability to ovulate. So if you're wanting a regular cycle, balance your blood sugar. Fat, fiber, and protein with as many meals as you can, that will help with that progesterone production. That'll help regulate your cycle as well, help with your moods, you know, help with everything else.
Oh, I'm so glad that we went into depth on that because that is such a well-rounded bunch of information on why you need to make those changes. Like not just saying you need to do this, because just hearing the why behind reducing the sugar is so helpful. It's so easy to deprioritize things like menstrual health accidentally in your body with diet.
Yes.
So that is just amazing. Like I'm so glad that you went into that. Mwah. Love you, Megan.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay, cool. And probably the most important question. So how can individuals work with you, and are there any resources that you would recommend?
Yeah, so I'm better known as the Biomedical Naturopath on Instagram. So you can certainly find me there. I am very active there, posting regularly over the week on all things hormone, mental health, and, you know, just everything women's health, I suppose, related. If you want to work with me, you can find me for an appointment on my Instagram as well. I have links there too. I can finally get around to this now because it's finally happening. I'm releasing my own hormone blood testing Bible. So that will be coming out in the next month.
Yay!
So I'm in the final stages of that. Yeah. So I've just signed off on the design yesterday, actually, which was super exciting.
Congrats.
And so that will be released. So if you want to know about your hormones, that will be, you know, as I said, your Bible to then take with you with any doctor appointment, and then you can become the expert on your body. Then you don't need me. That's my hope.
Oh, congratulations. That's so awesome. I'm glad that we caught you just
Thank you.
Woohoo, sweeping in.
Yes, absolutely. No, it's been a long time coming, but it's finally happening, which is super exciting.
Oh, that's so exciting. And all of your videos and everything like that, they're so insightful. They have so much information, and there's always amazing like wildlife chirping in the background as well, which I love.
I know.
you sound like you live in an oasis. Like there's always these birds like in the background. It's so lovely.
Yes, I'm very grateful. I live on 3 acres, so it's lovely out here.
And you're in Queensland.
Yes, Gold Coast Interland out, Gold Coast Interland on 3 acres. So it's beautiful. It's nice and secluded.
Amazing. And when booking an appointment, so you do online appointments as well? So anyone?
Yep. So my whole clinic runs online. So you can be anywhere in Australia. It doesn't matter. I have my whole clinic that runs online. And so I don't see anyone in person. So it doesn't matter where you are.
Sounds fan-bloody-tastic. Well, I felt like I was like 3/4 bottle full before I started chatting to you about this. And now I'm like 3 friggin' whole bottles full. So thank you so much for your time, Megan. Honestly, I think it's so freaking cool how much you know.
You're so welcome.
So many good nuggets of information in that one. And let's look into our hormones. Let's freaking do it.
Let's do it. Absolutely. Let's bring the revolution.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Congratulations, It's a Cyst. We hope you enjoyed it, and we can't wait for you to join us again next time. If you haven't already, go check out our website at www.congratulationsitsassist.com.au. Here you'll find all of our episodes, our Lady Parts blog with amazing stories from incredible women, our recipe section with plant-based, gluten-free and refined sugar-free meal options, and a way to contact us.
You'll find us on Instagram at congratulationsassist, Facebook congratulationsassist, or you can reach out directly, Kayla at congratulationsassist.com.au. And please remember, anything discussed on this podcast does not constitute medical advice. I'm not a doctor. I'm just interested. Please speak to your GP or other healthcare professional before making any changes. Oh, wait, one more thing. The music for this podcast was created by my amazing partner, Matthew Tanner, in our friend Harry's house. Until next time, know you.